Blog Talk Radio.
That's what's going on here tonight. James Bostic with you, Conservative Perspective on the Patriot Nation Radio Network, brought to you courtesy of the good folks at Blog Talk Radio. Got kind of an announcement I want to share with you. The simulcast, you know, we do a simulcast on Thursday nights with the good folks over at News Without Filters, NWF, a Stidham Media Communications group. And there has been a merger, and News Without Filters is now operating under the umbrella of the World Integrity News Network's broadcast empire. Yeah, and a remarkable thing that happened there, earth-shattering move in the alternative media world. And it's cool. We know Bobby B. Singer. He's the man behind WINN and another and a couple other pages out there, and he's a dynamic force, and he is he really wants to be a champion of the common man, and he's interested in news that speaks the truth. Because you know what? There's a lot of places out there, they tell you they're speaking the truth, but they aren't. And that's the only way I can say that. So we do the live thing Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Oh, one other thing. Tonight, the show's only going to be 60 minutes. Our wingman, Mark Hoffman, the solid left jab of the best 1-2 punch in all of alternative media, has some stuff going on with his son. And one of the important things in our organization is very clearly family, and that's where he needs to be. And that's exactly what he's doing, and I hope they have a great time. This can wait till another day. Have I said everything I need to say? I think I told you who I was. I think I told you who the show was, where we're at, who all we deal with. Kind of like to have a sound check. That might be nice. I'm guessing since I haven't had one that we're doing okay, but we need to go ahead and get one of those out of the way. Somebody tell me how I sound. Anyway, here's what's going on. I'm still kind of this thing that happened down at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School was thank you was it's still on me. And as most of you know, I'm in the school business, and you know that I really care about the guys that I work with, and I work with probably the most I don't know. What I want to, the most remarkable kids in the school. Let's just put it that way. And I know that every teacher probably feels that about their kids, you know, that they've got the best kids and they're committed, because all the, you know, the teachers I know, the bulk of them are, we'll say 99, 44, 100%. Committed. And I'm not going to lie to you, I've known a lot of them that were worthless. There's an old saying, those who can't do teach, and those who can't teach, teach phys ed. Now, and I'm not going to get any further into that, but I've seen those kind of cats, but they're in the minority. To be honest with you, they are in the minority. I've seen a lot of these guys, you know, the old timers, they've been there 35, 38, maybe 40 years, some of them. And that last 2 or 3 years, you know that their number's up and they're getting ready to roll out. So they just pretty much mail it in. They probably maintain order in their classroom and stuff, but it's time for them to retire, and usually they wait 2 or 3 years too late before they do it. But anyway, I want to get back to this. This is horrifying, and it's still horrifying to me. And I'm not talking about the shooting itself, which was disgusting and it's graphic, and we're not going to talk about that, because we've got moms and dads and wives, you know, spouses are still grieving, and our hearts and thoughts should rightfully be with them, praying for grace and peace for those good people. But there's something else that's more horrifying about this than simply this act of violence, this act of horrific violence. And I've been reading about it, and I've been reading some pretty reliable sources on it. And the more I read about it, and the more it sinks in, and the more I'm able to digest it, it sickens me. It absolutely sickens me. As a follow-up to what happened, as most of you know, Valentine's Day this year, February 14th, Nicholas Cruz walked into the high school that he had just recently been expelled from, Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School, and he killed 17 people. And as usual, when these tragedies happen, anybody who has a shred of humanity left about them recoil in horror. They're shocked, shocked and appalled. And I know that's a trite, cliche kind of phrase, but they are. They are truly shocked and they're truly appalled. It moves me. It sickens me every time this happens. From Dylan Klebold and his buddy at Columbine on up into the modern day, doesn't matter where these shootings have happened, they're horrifying. Robert Runcie is the superintendent for Howard County School System, which is an incredibly large school system in the state. Now, we're going to have to go back in time, and I've been talking about this on a couple of shows, and at the risk, you know, it bears repeating. So we're going to go through it, because this should sicken you. This should outrage you. And it should horrify you, because there, but for the grace of God, goes any school system in this country. This could happen anywhere. I'm in school business, people. I can tell you about it. It can happen. It's no joke. It's a very serious threat. Now back to Robert Runcie. As I said, Robert Runcie is the school superintendent of Broward County. He has been there for a number of years. And in my estimation, just as much to blame for the recent school murders as the killer himself. And they did it all in the name of federal greenbacks. Money. That's right. Just as a quick follow-up, though, Nicholas Cruz started shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. Within the area, there were two Miramar SWAT team members who do what SWAT team members do. They went to help. And now, and this should sicken you, ladies and gentlemen, they have been suspended for it. Yes, they've been suspended. These officers did not have permission to respond to the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School Valentine's Day. 17 people killed. Of course they didn't. There was a stand-down order. Nobody had permission. And they wouldn't have gotten permission either. So when the dust settles, the Broward gang, who stayed outside so the killer could finish making his case for gun control inside, will most likely have smooth career paths. And the guys who responded to the attacks, the stand-up guys, they get in trouble. Look at what happened in Benghazi. The only people that suffered any consequences were the guys on the ground. Chris Stevens. The SWAT officers who responded were Detective Jeffrey Gilbert, Detective Carl Schlosser. One of them told supervisors he was in the Coral Springs area when the gunfire happened. It's not known where the other drove from, but they both live close to the high school. A third SWAT member, Officer Kevin Gonzalez, was accused of being linked to several social media posts that put the city and the police in a negative light. He was suspended for violating the department's social media policy and its code of conduct. The afternoon of the shooting, Miramar police placed the SWAT team on standby just in case a request came from Broward County Sheriff's Office to assist. That call for the team never came. The Broward Sheriff's Office said Wednesday it could not confirm whether anyone spoke with Miramar that day, but said that Miramar's SWAT team was not needed during the incident. So apparently they had plenty of guys loitering in the parking lot, hiding behind their cruisers to handle the situation. Yeah. Sheriff Israel and his best boys were on top of it, at least once it came time to schedule the press interviews. Then they were in the height of their game. The instinct to run toward danger is a common one in police officers, and you see it during terrorist attacks. You see it during mass shootings. 9/11, anyone? Those guys knew those buildings were going to come down, and they knew it was a one-way mission, but they went anyway. The instinct. Some kind of weird thing that happens where cops try to save lives instead of waiting till everyone is dead so that Democrats can have some shiny new talking points. That's what disgusts me about all this when these things happen. And it always goes this way. Have you ever noticed? Those on the right usually call for a moment of reflection and prayers and thoughts for the victims and their families. Those on the left start screaming and blaming everybody except the wing nut who pulled the trigger. I hope those guys that stood outside in that parking lot and obeyed these stand-down orders, and they're probably going to go. They're probably going to have a pretty positive career path after this. They're going to move along onward and upward to their highest, most level of incompetence and ineffectiveness. I hope they never sleep another night. I hope that in every quiet moment they have, they can hear the screams and the gunshots and the pandemonium and the chaos that was going on inside that school. I hope they get sick to their stomachs every time they look in a mirror. I hope that they are shunned and ostracized. I hope that they wind up being pariahs because these people were cowards. They let kids die. They stood out there or they crouched, cowering in fear behind their cruisers, and they let kids die. Are those the kind of deputy sheriffs you want in your county, America? Are those the kind of people that you want charged with the safety and possibly survival of your kids? Not dead air, just sitting here thinking about that for a minute. It wasn't incompetence. Cowardice, perhaps, but it was not incompetence. Now, I've talked about this on a couple of different shows, and we're going to go back and we're going to rehash it again because there is a very clearly defined trail that gives credence and substance and gravitas, if you will, to my claim about Robert Runcie being just as responsible for those murders as the killer himself. Kind of an obscure conservative site. It's called Conservative Treehouse, and there's a blogger there that goes by the name of Sundance. Now, Sundance had been doing some research long before this happened. 4 or 5 years before this happened, into the political dynamics of, at first, the Miami-Dade school system. Now, there was a thing called the Promise Program, the Broward County Solution, in other words. But we've got to take a look at what was happening at Miami-Dade, which was the school district that Trayvon Martin came from. Another story, another time. In November of 2013, Sundance first reported Okay, just got a message that we're not on the air, and I'm hoping that that's fixed now. I don't know. I can't tell if it is or not. Anyway, we're going to go on as if we were. I'm hoping that we're. In 2013, Miami-Dade County and their school district was, they were really. Okay. Anyway, back to us. I hate this when this happens. Sometimes this thing just cuts out, right? I'll be talking like I am now. It's like somebody hits the mute button. At any rate, let me digress. In Miami-Dade, they started a program called the Promise Program. And to do this had to do with. See, it's something that's kind of you see here. But what it is in some of these bigger, badder, meaner school districts, there's a lot of crime that takes place. Crime. Robberies, assaults, crime. And the bulk of this crime in these areas is committed by black males. I'm not being a racist when I say this. Black males represent about 7% of the population, and they're responsible in the United States, and they're responsible for over 50% of the crime. So money gets involved. And Robert Runcie was in on this program that Broward County copied from Dade County. What happened was Barack Obama's Secretary of Education, Arnie Duncan, the wheels in the upper levels of law enforcement authority in Miami-Dade County, school administrators, the principals, and the NAACP. Entered into this agreement, this collaborative agreement. And what they said was that there was this huge differential in minority students, black students in particular, in terms of suspensions and arrests. And the reason that you saw these minority students, Latinos, but predominantly black male students, is because these were the guys that was doing all the bad things. These were the guys that were breaking the rules. These were the guys that were being thugs, that were being hoodlums. So what happened basically comes down to this. Arnie Duncan, Secretary of Education under Barack Obama, goes and meets with the people in Miami-Dade. And he says, listen, I know what the statistics say about young black men committing the bulk of crimes in your school district. It's a bad statistic. The president doesn't like it. And he sent me down here to talk to you guys to see if maybe we could figure out a way to, fix it. And they did. They did find a way. And here's what we're going to do. Here's how we're going to work this from now on. We're going to turn loose a boatload of federal dollars to your school system. But there's a catch. We can only turn loose these federal dollars to school systems where the crime rate, as it pertains statistically to black males or Hispanics, we'd kind of like to see that, down on the low side, if you know what I mean. And we'll probably throw in some money for the law enforcement agencies that work with these fine schools in your outstanding district. Oh, I gotcha. So here's what happens. They start underreporting the crime that takes place. It doesn't happen. If crime isn't being reported, the argument would go, crime's not being committed. Well, if crime's not being committed, then this school system is doing a bang-up job, and we here at the Department of Education all the way in Washington, D.C., it gives us great pleasure to hand you this gigantic sack full of money. Try not to spend it all in one place. Don't let it. Well, these guys, they got the money. Okay, the law enforcement people got the money. The administration, the school superintendent and the Board of Education there in Miami-Dade, and then later Broward County. Runcie gets in on this. He sees what happens in Miami-Dade, and he says, hey, that's for me. So they get on the bandwagon with it, and they enter into a similar collaborative agreement between the Department of Education, law enforcement officials, and the NAACP. So they mirror Miami-Dade County's activities, and they underreport the crimes committed by predominantly black males, who are responsible for most of it anyway. But they lump them in with Hispanics, with the LGBTQ kids, and handicapped children. I have been in the school system. I've been in the school business for coming up. This will mark, let's see, what year is it? This will mark my 14th year in the school business. And I work, you know, as most of you know, I work in the special ed department of the high school that I graduated from. So I kind of got that whole welcome back Cotter thing going, and I dig it. It's a good thing for me. Not once in my 15 years, and I've seen a few things, have I ever seen a kid on crutches whip out a switchblade or beat up another kid. Not once. Not once. I've never seen a kid in a wheelchair cuss out a teacher and then start knocking stuff over and picking fights with the resource officers. Not once. And I never will. But they want to lump all these guys in together to mask the real perpetrators of the crime, and that's, of course, black males. This is not me. This is not me saying this. You can look this up. Black males, roughly 7% of the population, responsible for more than 50% of crime committed in the United States. So to make sure that the school system gets the money, there's a change in the responsibility of authorities. There's a switch. Law enforcement officers aren't in charge of how crime is reported when it occurs, when it's committed on school grounds or within the purview of the school system. The administrators of the school are responsible for that. So as crime is underreported and these bad actors get hauled in time and time and time again, and it doesn't take too many times before they figure out, yo, man, they ain't going to do nothing to me. There are no consequences. So what do bad actors do when there are no consequences? Well, they don't look at it as incumbent upon themselves to change their ways. No, they continue acting badly. And they encourage others to do so as well, because people, the more timid types, see what's happening to the bad actors, which is fundamentally nothing. Hey, hey, that's for me. And nothing can be done to stem this, because if the Board of Education and the law enforcement people who work with that Board of Education want to keep those Yankee greenback dollars flowing in, what are they going to do? Well, they're going to continue to lie about crime statistics in their school systems. So, oh gosh, where are we at? We're down to the bottom of the hour. I think we're going to take a quick break because, quite frankly, all this talking makes a man thirsty. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to grab something here to play, and I don't know what that's going to be. But we're not quite through with this. I thought we would be going on to some more, but we're going to hang with this a little bit more because I just want to run this down, man. I just want to run this down. So that's what we're going to do. Yeah. I haven't heard this song in a long, long time. We will be back with more of a conservative perspective right after this brief musical interlude. You guys sit tight. We'll be back in a minute.
In the heart of the night.
And we're back, hopefully. James Bostic here, Conservative Perspective on the Patriot Nation Radio Network, brought to you courtesy of the good folks at Blog Talk Studios. We do it twice. That's right. Not once, but twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, live, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thursdays, we do that with a simulcast with the good folks at NWF, News Without Filters, a Stidham's communications group. And they are now operating under the umbrella of the World Integrity News Network. And we're happy to see that marriage between those two media giants. And kind of nice to be somewhat mildly and indirectly involved in that. So anyway, here's where we're going. We're going back. I was talking about... Well, you win some, you lose some. I was going back, and I was talking about this guy, Robert Runcie. You know, he's the superintendent of Broward County Schools. So we've established in the first part of the show, we've established that this was an incompetence. What was going on here is these guys, fundamentally, in order to get federal dollars, were told to downgrade serious crime into nothing. Basically. So now that brings us up to the present day where we have the tragedy that takes place on February 14th. Rather than give a transparent and honest and public account of how Nicholas Cruz was able to avoid the juvenile justice system, even as his behavior became increasingly volatile, Superintendent Robert Runcie has recommended a comprehensive investigation of Cruz's educational background to be completed by June 2018. Now, here's what's going to happen. On top of everything that's happened, rather than this clown manning up and saying that this is what happened, because he's not going to do that. They're going to pony up the district. The school district is going to pony up somewhere around $60,000 to pay an independent consulting firm, the Collaborative Educational Network, to look over Cruz's school records to determine what went wrong. No, I'm not making it up. I can't make it up. Now, on its website, the Tallahassee-based Collaborative Educational Network in partnership with Evergreen Solutions lists Broward County as one of its former clients. In 2014, this company was hired to evaluate the efficiency and the effectiveness of the county's special education services after its exceptional student education advisory council criticized the department's executive director. Now, remember, Robert Runcie is the top dog. He's the man. He's the superintendent. He's the superintendent now. He was the superintendent back in 2013 when they entered into this deal with a federal devil. And who knows how many souls he'll continue to collect. So there was an evaluation done by these guys. Special ed department doesn't look good. The Educational Collaborative's report showed 110 areas of weakness in this county's program for its special education students. Specifically, the report found the special ed student-to-teacher ratio was much higher in Broward County than in neighboring counties. Investigators also discovered unspent millions of dollars earmarked for specialists and technicians, and most importantly, cited inadequately trained teachers as a contributing factor in the department's, in the special ed department's subpar review. Now, around the same time that this collaborative Evergreen firm was issuing its indictment on Broward's special education service, 2014, Nicholas Cruz, murderer, was removed from West Glades Middle School for violent outbursts and was subsequently placed in a special school for emotionally and behaviorally disabled children. In 2016, in the 10th grade, he was sent to his home district's Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, where he was eventually removed again in February of 2017 for an assault. Soon after his removal from Stoneman Douglas, he bought an AR-15, passing a background check that showed no arrest warrant or no arrest record. This is key. Keep that in mind. I'm going to read that again. Soon after his removal from Stoneman Douglas High School, Nicholas Cruz bought an AR-15, passing a background check that showed no arrest record. We know why there is no arrest record. Remember what we talked about? These guys downplayed violent behavior, and rather than treating it as a criminal act, they whitewashed and covered it up. Throughout the rest of the year, from that time on, 2017, Cruz attended Broward County's alternative public schools until the mass murder on February 14th the following year. Now, Robert Runcie's decision to hire this firm, Collaborative, a firm that was already familiar with Broward County's special education services and their shortcomings, probably suggests that the special ed department, with its history of poor performance, will be held at least partially responsible for allowing Cruz to slip through the cracks. So you see, the scapegoating has already begun. Finger pointing. In a March 6th Sun Sentinel article, school personnel stated that Cruz's IEP, or Individual Education Plan, was drafted by a team of specialists and approved by his mother. Same way it works in West Virginia. Superintendent Runcie also weighed in on Cruz's years as a special ed student, stating that although these plans may require lighter discipline than regular students for some infractions, school officials are expected to call police if students bring weapons to school. Really? Are the school officials expected to call police, or are they supposed to first consult with the Broward County Collaborative Agreement that was signed by everyone from the state attorney to police chiefs, to the sheriffs, to the juvenile justice judge, and on to the NAACP president, and so many other Florida notables? And speaking of the agreement, and the Promise program. Mr. Runcie is now vehemently defending the discipline guidelines designed to keep students, particularly blacks and Latinos, from being suspended, expelled, or arrested. Conservative Treehouse, the blog I was telling you about earlier. Well, they're now being blamed. Marco Rubio, Rush Limbaugh is also taking a heat on this. And Fox News are accused of blowing this whole thing out of proportion and exploiting this incident for whatever varied agendas they may have. Smoke. So the New Times goes on to claim that the Obama-era plan, and this was the brainchild of Barack Obama and his social justice warriors and Arne Duncan, who was Secretary of Education at that time, to halt this school-to-prison pipeline that began with legislation back in '09, introduced and signed into law by then-Republican Governor Charlie Crist, who's now a Democrat, in order to rein in the out-of-control, zero-tolerance policies. And you know what, in terms of zero tolerance, let me say this. There are some psychotic zero tolerance policies out there. I don't care if a kid takes a Pop-Tart and bites it into the shape of a Nike missile launcher. It's not a Nike missile launcher. It's a chewed up Pop-Tart, you idiots. I digress. So in summary, this bill that they wanted to try and pass, that they passed, requires that, number one, any disciplinary or, if we're getting into the crime breaking, in the law breaking area, any prosecutorial action taken against a student who violates a zero tolerance policy must be based on the individual student and the particular circumstances surrounding the student's misconduct, encouraging school districts to use alternatives to expulsion or referral to law enforcement agencies, unless using such alternatives would pose a threat to school safeties. What are they saying? Okay, we got a zero tolerance policy, and that's for everybody, no matter what. But if it's a black kid or a Spanish kid, one of those crippled guys, give them a pass. See what I mean? So, and that's what happened. So the bill's recommendation when it came to exploring alternatives for expulsion left the door open just enough for Obama's education department to pervert the true intention of Crist's bill, namely to stop what one psychologist called the psychotic zero tolerance school policies, where, like I said, seven-year-olds get suspended for biting a Pop-Tart into the shape that looks like a gun. Maybe it was an L. It could have been a seven. We don't know. But they thought the worst of this kid, and they gave him the boot for a few days. So, employing the carrot and stick approach, Arne Duncan, Obama's education secretary, and his attorney general, Eric Holder, they threatened to go after school districts that were not complying with these federal guidelines based on this disproportionate number of minorities disciplined in the nation's schools. They didn't like the number, okay? They did not like the number. Doesn't matter that the number is an accurate reflection of who's committing crimes in the nation's school districts. They don't like it. They want to see it smaller. So make it happen. Get me? And that's how it went. Local school districts, according to Obama's discipline reform initiative, would be required to provide alternative methods such as restorative justice, which I have no idea what that means. I think those are just words somebody's put together. I don't think it means anything. Counseling and behavioral supports to keep minority students out of the prison pipeline, or else there would be no money, no federal money, and maybe, possibly, even charges of civil rights violations. Superintendent Runcie was down with this, man. He was all the way in with it. At a National Urban League conference in 2015, he said, "We're not going to continue to arrest our kids. Once you have an arrest record, it becomes difficult to get scholarships, to get a job, or to go into the military. So rather than teach these kids not to break the daggone law, we're going to go ahead and let them break it, but we're not going to do anything about it because it's going to hurt your future. I know, just sit and let that soak in for a minute. So, this agenda-driven, clearly racially motivated program that Mr. Runcie is all on board with is now in the crosshairs of public scrutiny after what happened at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. And dudes backtracking, dip, dodge, dive, ducking and dodging, and covering up. He says he doesn't know whether or not school administrators reported crews to law enforcement at any time. He does not know. He is the superintendent of Broward County Schools. He is pulling down $335,000 a year. He has access to records and personnel and can have any question he wants answered with one phone call. He also says that the Promise Program isn't at fault. It's not to blame for this because Cruz was not a participant. And if that's true, why wasn't he? Does this intervention service exclude and discriminate against special ed students? According to Promise literature, students who have committed misdemeanor crimes in school, including threats and assaults, they're referred to the Promise Program, not to the police. And Nicholas Cruz, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the ships at sea certainly qualified for that. There are seven steps in Broward County before a school resource officer, a deputy sheriff working within the school system has to go through before he can make an arrest. He has to. There, you can't skip. You have to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You got to talk to the principal about what the kid did. Next, you got to evaluate the situation. Then you issue a warning. Then you talk to mom and dad or Aunt Harriet or grandpa or whoever. You consider the alternatives. And penultimately, in step six, after exhausting all other steps, the officer may consider placing the student under arrest. The final step involves placing all contraband into the custody of law enforcement personnel involved in the arrest. So in other words, if he's got a pipe on him that he was smoking reefers with, or he's got, needles, or a Coke spoon, or, whatever these cats are doing these days in high school. It's hard to say. In my day, a bag of weed and a six-pack of beer, and you were off for a hell of a Friday night. But not anymore. These dudes have graduated from all that, so there's no telling. So when the kid is finally arrested, after going through all these ridiculous, politically correct hoops, then, what they're talking is about the stuff they find when they pat him down, when they search him. So while this plays out, while all this is going on, the students who really want to learn are being forced to share a classroom with kids who should be expelled or should be locked up. Bob Runcie says this about the Promise Program. We're not going to dismantle a program that's been successful in the district because of false information that someone has put out there. We will neither manage nor lead by rumors. Well, we can draw two conclusions from this adherence to a radical racist practice. First, the independent review will leave him fundamentally unscathed and innocent of all wrongdoing. Secondly, students and moms and dads in Broward County should be demanding at the top of their lungs that teachers and school personnel and security officers be armed. And if they have any sense about them, they will see this man run out of town on a rail. This guy is a danger. He is an accessory to murder before and apparently with these statements, since he's going to allow this program to continue after the fact. You know, every now and then some story, and I'm usually pretty cool with this, but every now and then there'll be some story that puts a hook in me. And I guess this was just one of them. And nowhere do I see it more clearly that this corrupt practice of cooking the books just so it doesn't look as though black kids are committing all the crimes that they're committing, and they are. Somebody's just doctoring it up. Again, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not making this up. You can look it up. Black men are 7% of the national population. They commit over 50% of the national crime. Violent crime. But I suppose we should probably move on now. We don't have a whole lot of time left. We'll go back and talk a little bit. You know, it's been, and it reached, you know, national newsworthiness, I guess, earlier in the week. But it would appear, based on everything that we've heard from our outstanding educational correspondent, Joe Frost. And Joe's not on tonight. Joe's taking a well-deserved rest. She worked to the point of absolute breakdown. She was sick as a dog over the weekend, but she was still in Charleston. She was still calling in after a full day of doing all the things that she was doing down there and paying close attention to the political theater and the procedural machinations of the House and the Senate here in the Mountain State. She could call in and she could give a very clear and concise breakdown of everything that was happening and made some fairly reliable predictions on which way it was going to turn out. And Joe, if you're listening, once again, all of us here at a conservative perspective, thank you very, very much for, number one, your tireless efforts on behalf of your fellow educators, but taking on the added responsibility of informing our listeners. And we're extremely grateful for that. A lot of lessons went around in this work stoppage. Not a single police car got pooped on or set on fire or tipped over or stomped on. Not a single person got hit in the head with a combination lock put up into a couple of tube socks nice and tight. Nobody got stabbed. Nobody got beat up. There wasn't any need for mace. There wasn't any litter. As an act of civil disobedience, and you guys have probably all seen the memes, or at least West Virginians have on their news feeds at their various social networks. The educators and the administrators and service personnel who assembled in the Capitol or at their various rallying points throughout their home counties, all 55 counties here in the state of West Virginia. They maintained themselves with decorum. It was a textbook example, a constitutionally textbook example of civil disobedience. No litter, no violence, no nothing. A peaceful assembly and a legitimate right to demand redress for grievances. Plain and simple. The only people who look bad on this are the people in the halls of power in Charleston, West Virginia. That would be Jim Justice. Quite an education. Jim figured out real quick which way that was going to go. After 4 days, he fundamentally rethought his position and, in a gesture of spite, I think, the president of the Senate, Mitch Carmichael, and a cabal of other establishment Republicans sandbagged, procedurally did things to keep the teachers off balance. They drug this out. This could have been done in 4 days, 5 days. But these people in the Senate, and this is what kills me, these people in the Senate knew what they were doing. There was no way they were going to win. They couldn't. It was like six or seven guys versus fundamentally the entire state in terms of public opinion. And some of them, it's their last ride because they're going to get voted out and replaced by better, smarter, non-establishment Republicans. Or they're simply just not going to seek a re-election. And that's fine, too. Get out. We don't need you. The West Virginia teachers, West Virginia educators and administrators and superintendents. Again, I can't say enough about this. This could have created a great deal of enmity. If this work stoppage had gone on and the superintendents had not called off school, this could have been very, very difficult on a lot of teachers because there would have been people who would have crossed the picket lines. And I've already talked about this. I'm glad I didn't have to, but if school had been held and I had guys in my room and I had a bunch of these cats keeping me from them, they're not going to keep me from them. I'm going to cross and they can say whatever they want. That's my mission. So, but that didn't happen, mercifully and luckily. That didn't happen. I think it was a very, very smart and prudent decision by all 55 superintendents in the counties to just call off school. That way, none of that happens. And I think that it also was an outstanding, although subtle, gesture of solidarity to the educators who were laying it on the line. Kudos. Kudos, superintendents. Kudos, Vincent Price. David Price. David Price. I do that all the time. I don't know why I do that. The superintendent for Raleigh County Schools is David Price. Not Vincent. I don't know why I do that. But anyway. Well, Guinevere here says I've got about 90 seconds. We're going to wrap it up a little bit early. Thank you all very, very much for taking the time out to listen. Mark Hoffman's got some family things going on tonight, so there won't be any follow-up show. Tonight is just a solid right hand of ACP. Belton, those liberal red skulls, right on the jaw. And we're happy to do it for you. We will be back next Tuesday. Of course, now you know we do the weekend show, which will be coming up on Sunday. That'll be uploaded to the Talk America Radio Network. Thank you. Talk America Radio Network and talkamericaradio.org. They have two audio streams, the Liberty and the Justice stream. And you can find ACP on the Justice stream for sure, and perhaps a couple days a week on the Liberty stream as well. So, having said all that, let me say this. We'll be seeing you next Tuesday, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. God bless each and every one of you. Thank you for listening. God bless America. We'll see you then.